ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 9th chapter, 11th verse. I guess I'll just read it and then. We can do the word for word. Bhaktim muhu pravahatam tvai me prasango bhuyadananta mahatam amalasayanam ye nanjasobanam uruvyasanam bhavabdin neshe bhavadguna katam ritapanamata bhaktim devotional service muhu constantly. Pravahatam of those who perform. Tvayi unto you. Me my prasanga intimate association. Bhuyat may it become. Ananta, O unlimited. Mahatam, of the great devotees. Amala Ashayanam, whose hearts are freed from material contamination. Yena, by which Anjasa, easily. Ulbanam, terrible. Uru, great. Vyasanam, full of dangers. Bhava Abdim, the ocean of material existence. Neshe, I shall cross. Bhavat, your. Guna, transcendental qualities. Kata, pastimes. Amrita, nectar. Eternal. Pana, by drinking. Mataha, mad. Translation. Dhruva Maharaj continued, O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly as the waves of a river constantly flow. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. It will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existent. Purport. The significant point in Dhruva Maharaj's statement is that he wanted the association of pure devotees. Transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engage in Krishna consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible. From this statement by Dhruva Maharaj, it is clear that unless one is associated with devotees, his devotional service does not mature. It does not become distinct from material activities. The Lord says, Satam Prasangam, Mama Virya Samvido Bhivanti Hritkarna Rasayana. Only in the association of pure devotees can the words of Lord Krishna be fully potent and relishable to the heart and ear. Dhruva Maharaj explicitly wanted the association of devotees. That association in devotional activities is just like the waves of an incessantly flowing river. In our Krishna Consciousness Society, we have full engagement 24 hours a day. Every moment of our time is always busily engaged in the service of the Lord. This is called the incessant flow of devotional service. A Mayavadi philosopher may question us, you may be very happy in the association of devotees, but what is your plan for crossing the ocean of material existence? I love it. Dhruva Maharaj's answer, it is not very difficult. He clearly says that this ocean can be crossed very easily if one simply becomes mad to hear the glories of the Lord. Bhagavad Guna Katha. For anyone who persistently engages in hearing the topics of the Lord from Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and who is actually addicted to this process, just as one becomes addicted to intoxicants, it is very easy to cross the nations of material existence. The ocean of material nations is compared to a blazing fire, but to a devotee this blazing fire is insignificant because he is completely absorbed in devotional service. Although the material world is blazing fire, to a devotee it appears full of pleasure, Vishram Purna Sukhayate. The purport of this statement by Dhruva Maharaj is that devotional service in the association of devotees is the cause of the development of further devotional service. By devotional service only is one elevated to the transcendental planet Goloka Vrindavan, and there also there is only devotional service. For the activities of devotional service, both in this world and in the spiritual world, are one and the same. Devotional service does not change. The example of a mango can be given here. If one gets an unripe mango, it is still a mango. And when it is ripe, it remains the same mango. But it has become more tasteful and relishable. Similarly, there is devotional service performed according to the direction of the spiritual master and the injunctions and regulative principles of Shastra. And there is devotional service in the spiritual world rendered directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are both the same. There is no change. The difference is that one stage is unripe and the other is ripe and more relishable. It is possible to mature in devotional service only in the association of devotees. Om Agyanatim Arandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Hukam Koroti Vachalam Pangam Bangayate Garim Yakripatamaham Vande Shri Gunundina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shanyavari Pastachyade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was given my choice of verses this morning. I chose this verse for a particular reason. When I was speaking the hour of the evening, I was quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura and giving his explanation of what is the purpose of festivals. And first, he gave five purposes, the first being to give everyone the opportunity to associate with devotees. The second was to destroy material attachments. The third was to be compassionate upon all living beings. The fourth was to awaken a taste for the holy name of the Lord. And the fifth was to engage in the service of Lord Hari, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. So I thought it would be appropriate to take a verse which speaks about association with devotees. This is one of my favorites. The verse itself, of course, is very beautifully composed by Dhruva Maharaj. And the purport is very beautifully composed by Srila Prabhupada, which gives a lot of emphasis about the importance of association with devotees. In fact, Prabhupada concludes his commentary and states it two other times in the purport that it is possible to mature in devotional service only in the association of devotees, which gives us a little clue of just how important it is to associate. Before I begin speaking on this verse, I was thinking also that something that Satchinanda Maharaj said yesterday, he was explaining how it's very important to understand both the context and the intent of certain statements which are made. He was specifically speaking about Srila Prabhupada, that sometimes we may take things out of context, and if we don't understand the context, it could be a cause of dissension. And the intent also. So I would like to take the opportunity to put this verse into context and also to describe the intent behind Dhruva Maharaj as he's speaking this verse, because it's very, very relevant and it's, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentaries in this verse and other verses also in this particular section, Dhruva Maharaj is going to later lament for what he's saying here in this verse to the Lord. You might say, why is he going to lament? Well, I think it's important that we put it into context so that we can understand why would he lament about praying for the association of devotees. So the context is that this verse was spoken by Dhruva Maharaj to the Lord. In fact, when the Lord appeared before Dhruva Maharaj, after his execution of severe austerities, which were instructed by him, by Narada Muni, the Lord spoke to him. The Lord first appeared, and then Dhruva Maharaj offered prayers. And these are the prayers which he offered to the Lord. And in fact, the only thing he asked for the Lord in that darshan was this. This was his only request. O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly. So that's the context. But now, to go back a little bit, we have to try to understand how is it that Dhruva got to this point, to get the darshan of the Lord. What is it that motivated him to go to the forest in the first place? What is it that motivated him to execute such severe austerities whereby after 6 months he could achieve the darshan of the Lord? And it all goes back to that famous time in the king's palace of Maharaja Dhanapad when Dhruva attempted to sit on his father's lap. As we know, Dhruva was the son of Suniti, and Uttanapad had two queens, Suniti and Suruchi. And when Dhruva Maharaj made his attempt to sit on Suniti's lap, Suruchi, who was a little envious of Dhruva, and she stopped him, and she said to him that if you want to get the opportunity to sit on your father's lap, then she gave him good instruction. You should go to the forest, perform severe austerities, get the darshan of the Lord. And if you get the darshan of the Lord, then you can ask him for a benediction. And she suggested that if you get that opportunity to ask for a benediction, you should ask him that in your next life, you can take birth in my womb. Because if you take birth in my womb, then you can sit on your father's lap. But my child, unfortunately, in this life, you took birth in the womb of a superior co-wife to your father. And in fact, it was explained that Maharaj Uttanapad actually did consider Suniti to be inferior to Suruchi. She was the favorite of the two queens. Now, of course, we know there are sometimes these circumstances happen. I mean, this the queens, you know, they become a little bit envious and of somebody's attention, especially that. What is the story of a Chitraketu Maharaj? Also, the same thing happened, right? The queens, they became a little envious that when Chitraketu Maharaj finally was able to produce a son, then they were all barren and he couldn't produce a son. They poisoned the child. Anyways, Suruchi, she was envious of Dhruva. So, Dhruva, as we remember, was very angry. In fact, I think the analogy was given, he became like a serpent, began hissing in anger, that his mother would say such a his stepmother would say such a thing to him. And he was also angry because his father didn't say anything about it. You know, he had just as equal, he had equal rights to sit on his father's lap, but his father said nothing. And out of great anguish, he just left that place. And he went immediately to his mother. And Suniti, she was also quite disturbed. And by that time, when Dhruva had gone to his mother, all the palace residents, they were there. And she saw Dhruva, in such anger, and all the palace residents who saw the whole thing take place, they began to describing to Suniti what actually happened. And the first thing Suniti said to Dhruva Maharaj is that, Dhruva, you should not wish anything inauspicious for anybody. Anyone who causes pain to others, he'll also have to experience pain himself. First thing he told, took a lot. She was very angry also. But she tried to come to a higher state of consciousness and to protect her son. She actually didn't act according to a lower nature, but she actually recommended, don't be vengeful towards your stepmother. Why don't you look at the good side? She gave you some very good instruction. She said, you should go to the forest and seek out the Supreme Lord. That sounds like a pretty good instruction to me. Therefore, she recommended to Dhruva Maharaj to follow the instruction of Suruchi and to take advantage and go to the forest and seek out the darshan of the Supreme Lord, and then upon achieving darshan, you can get the fulfillment of your desires. Now, that instruction itself is I oftentimes quote a verse. I've spoken from this verse a few times. I oftentimes quote a verse in this connection. It's a very wonderful verse and actually deserves its own class. But it's a verse that helps us to understand Suniti's mood and helps us understand what she was trying to teach Dhruva. It's the verse in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Shamik Rishi. Tiraskrita vipalabdha kshapta kshipta hataha pi nasyatat pati kurvanti tad bhakta kavayo pihi. That devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, they're cursed, they're neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. This is a powerful verse. I memorized this verse at a time when it was really relevant for me. I've known it for 40 years. And quoted it many times. It was at a time when I was also trying to contain myself from a vengeful mood of being insulted. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Well, it is here nor there, but... But that was Suniti's mood. That's what she was telling Dhruva. That, you know, whether you're neglected, disturbed, insulted, you know, cursed, you know, even killed, a devotee will never seek vengeance. This verse was spoken by Shamik Rishi when Shamik Rishi learned that his son Sringi had cursed Maharaj Parikshit. When Shamik Rishi heard that Sringi had cursed Maharaj Parikshit, he was thinking that my son has committed such a heinous act. He doesn't understand such a great devotee as Maharaj Parikshit. And he's cursed him unnecessarily for such a small thing as garlanding me with a snake. And he was thinking that at that time, the best thing that could possibly happen is that with Parikshit Maharaj will just deal with my son and counter-curse him. Because he's fully capable of doing it. Like, he's a pure devotee. He's fully capable. But after some contemplation, he began to think about it. Then he cited this verse. But Taraskrita Vipalabdha, the fact is that devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they won't seek vengeance. I have no hope, fulfillment of my desire. Pariksit Maharaj won't do it. So he just... I leave it up to you, Lord. You take care of my son. See that he's properly dealt with for this heinous offense to Pariksit Maharaj. So Suniti was in that same mood. So she told Dhruva, don't wish anything inauspicious for anyone else. Simply, if you do that, if you cause pain to others, it's going to have to come back. You're going to have to reap the consequences too. In fact, recently, it's another relevant point. Recently, I was reading a commentary of Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, and he was explaining that the disrespect, when Lord Chaitanya says that one should respect all living beings, he was defining that disrespect of a living entity means to purposely, mindfully, deliberately do something to somebody that you know is going to be painful to them. And he quotes one verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam to support this point. He quotes the verse spoken by the Avanti Brahman. When the Avanti Brahman says that the sharp arrows that pierce the chest and enter into the heart are not as painful as the arrows of insulting words of materialistic persons which enter into the heart and become lodged there. He says it's more painful. Jiva Goswami quotes that and says, therefore, it's even more painful. A sharp arrow pierces the heart. Yes, okay, that's painful. But when the arrow becomes lodged there, that's most painful. So he says that, he quotes that to say that a sign of disrespect towards living beings, because Lord Chaitanya even says, he says that once simply chants my holy name incessantly and never disrespects and never criticizes any living being. He says, all living entities throughout the entire creation, they are my servants. He says, certainly I will bestow upon them love of God. So, anyways, of course, Suruchi, unfortunately, she was envious. And she inflicted a lot of pain into Dhruva Maharaj's heart. By that envious mentality, she was thinking, I'm going to cause Dhruva so much pain by this. And she did. It caused him so much pain. And Suniti was saying, don't do the same thing. Don't do it. Just look at the bright side. Don't do anything which is inauspicious to others. Bright side is you go to the forest and you take shelter you go to the forest and seek out the Supreme Lord. Of course, we know on his way to the forest, Narada Muni, who is always very conveniently appearing whenever he sees a good candidate for bhakti. And Narada Muni has been described by Vyasadeva himself to be as good as the all-pervasive supersoul. And therefore, because he understood immediately that Dhruva Maharaj would be a good candidate, he appeared to Dhruva as he was entering in the forest. And he first he tested Dhruva. He said, Dhruva, you're a young boy. You're going to go to the forest and perform severe austerities at 5 years old? You know, why don't you just be better? You just go back and be equipoised, try to become undisturbed by happiness and distress, and you'll see that this is not a very serious matter. You know, come back when you're a little bit, if that doesn't work, come back when you're a little bit older. But he tried to, and he gave many good instructions to Dhruva Maharaj at that time, but we won't digress. Dhruva Maharaj basically said, what you said is very good, but you know, I'm a kshatriya, and I'm really angry. And what you've told me, all these things, they don't touch my heart. He couldn't hear it. He said, they don't touch my heart. I can't. Of course, there's another event which is going to play out. But Narada Muni could see that Dhruva Maharaj was very determined. And he was good stock, too. He understand because he was good stock, he was also, you know, good lineage. His father is Uttanapad, his grandfather is Svayambhuva Manu, his great-grandfather is Lord Brahma. Good stock. So, in fact, he told Dhruva Maharaj to accept the process by which he could get the darshan of the Lord. He told him to go to Madhuvan, go to the banks of the Yamuna River to perform austerities. And he gave him a mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he was actually given initiation into the Vaishnava mantra. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary that when he gave him this Vaishnava mantra, he actually initiated Dhruva as his disciple. And being very expert in how to dovetail the propensities of his disciple, he recommended a process by which he could actually achieve the darshan of the Lord. And he told him that by engaging in this process, chanting this mantra, performing these austerities, you'll come to the platform of devotional service. And devotional service surpasses everything else. When you achieve devotional service, certainly you'll get the fulfillment of all your desires. Because that is the nature of the Supreme Lord. He's very inclined to fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. Dhruva Maharaj took the instructions of Narada Muni. He went to the Madhuvan, to the banks of the Yamuna. He began performing austerities. Every 3 days he would eat roots and berries. And then for one continuous month, he would only eat every 3 days, just some roots and berries. Then in the second month, he ate dried leaves every 6 days. And then for the third month, I think he started controlling his breath. And after every 9 days, he took a breath. And after the fourth month, talk about determination. Good stock, right? Like you said. 5-year-old boy. After 5 months, he had complete control of his breath, so much control of his breath that he was actually controlling the life airs of the universe. And even the demigods began to experience suffocation because of his austerities. It's described because of his austerities, he was pushing down the earth. Just in the example, it's just like an elephant in a boat may push down the boat and cause it to rock one side and another side and another side. He was pushing down the earth from one side to the next and suffocating the universe. And then, and after that, his absorbed and complete meditation on the Supreme Lord, which was the fruit of his austerities and sacrifices. And then the Lord appeared to him. No, first the demigods went to the Lord and said, look, we're having problems with this kid. None of us can breathe. Can you do something to help us out? And the Lord said, don't worry, it's Dhruva Maharaj. I'll go and I'll take care of it. And the Lord gave him assurance. The demigods became pacified. They felt sheltered to think, okay, the Lord said he'll take care of it. We can go back. And the Lord told him, go back to your residence and I'll go now and I'll see what I can do to help. Got on the back of Garuda. He went before Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was steeped in deep meditation upon the form of his Lord. And then the Lord appeared before him and then his meditation broke and he saw that form of the Lord before him. And when he saw that form of the Lord before him, he became so overwhelmed upon perceiving that beautiful form of the Lord. And he began composing prayers, glorifying the Lord. And one of those prayers, as we said right here, is this verse. He says, O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in transcendental loving service constantly, as the waves of a river constantly flow. And such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. So he's asking, please, bless me, give me the association of devotees. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually explains in the commentary, he says, this is how valuable association of devotees is. He says that one gets the darshan of the Lord, and then the association of the Lord. What does one ask the Lord? He asked the Lord, give me the association of devotees. It's very powerful when you think about it. You get the association of the Lord, and then in the association of the Lord, you ask one thing to ask for. Give me the association. There must be something behind that. There must be something valuable in the association of devotees to ask for the association of devotees in the presence of the Lord. Something must be there. So, anyways, then he he asks for this benediction as well as the prayers that he's composed to the Lord. And then the Lord speaks to Dhruva and says, "My dear Dhruva," he says, "what you have asked for me is not very easy to attain, but I will fulfill all of your desires." Then what does he say? He said, "I will give you a planet, a pole star, where you will be able to go, where there will be no birth, no death. And you'll go to this planet, and you'll stay there eternally." After he said, of course, Dhruva Maharaj, one of the things he wanted, is he wanted a kingdom better than his great-grandfather's. So by getting this planet, he gets the kingdom better than his great-grandfather's. When everything in the universe is dissolution takes place, the Dhruvaloka still remains. So, then what does the Lord tell Dhruva? He says, "And then your brother Uttama, he will go to the forest and he'll be killed. And your mother's and your stepmother Saruchi, when she hears that your brother's been killed, she will enter the forest in great anguish, and she'll be devoured by a forest fire." And then he continues telling Dhruva, "You will rule this planet for 36,000 years. Your mind, you will perform great sacrifices. Your mind will always be fixed in thoughts of me. And after ruling this planet, after your father leaves and gives the kingdom of this ruling of this kingdom to you, you'll for 36,000 continuous years you will rule it, and then you'll go back to my abode." And then the Lord left. And then, after the Lord left, when this discussion was taking place between Maitreya and Vidura, Maitreya was asking Vidura, First Maitreya said that after Dhruva Maharaj received this benediction from the Lord, he began to lament. And Vidura couldn't understand, how was it he got the association of the Lord, he got all his desires fulfilled, he gets eternal residence in a spiritual world. Can you please tell me, why is Dhruva lamenting? And therefore then Maitreya goes on to explain to Vidura that the reason why Dhruva was lamenting, he was lamenting because the Lord appeared before him, fulfilled all of his previous desires. And he didn't hear what he asked him for. When he asked him for the association of devotees eternally, he didn't say a word about it. And he was in great anguish. He was disturbed. He was shameful. He was embarrassed. He was distressed with himself, saying, "I can't believe it. The Lord must think that I'm trying to be duplicitous with him. I'm being deceitful with him. I asked him for the association of devotees, and all he talked about was all those foolish things that I wanted before because I wanted revenge." And he was suffering and lamenting. And now all the future verses will go on to explain that how Dhruva Maharaj was even saying, he said, "I'm just like a diseased person who is being treated by a doctor after he's died." That's how he just said, "What's the value of being treated by a doctor after I've died?" He said, "I could have had my desire is fulfilled for association of devotees, but the Lord didn't fulfill them. He left." And he was, cursing himself, not cursing himself, but he was lamenting. Of course, his lamentation was spiritual. There's good lamentation also, and it's not that Dhruva was any less a pure devotee at that time, because he was lamenting, but one of the symptoms of a pure devotee, he also laments for his past. And Dhruva Maharaj was lamenting in this way. And Prabhupada actually says in the purport of one of those verses, he gives a little important instruction. He says that one should be very careful when one worships the Lord for some material benediction. He says if one worships the Lord for some material benediction, he may get his desires fulfilled, but he'll have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. In fact, there's that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that we oftentimes think about where, I can't remember who says it, my devotee engages in my devotional service, but at the same time he wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he's like a fool who willingly gives up ambrosia, nectar, to drink poison. Why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget all of these things. And then Kaviraj Goswami quotes a verse from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, which states that the Lord, when the devotee of the Lord approaches the Lord for some benediction, the Lord will fulfill the desires of his devotees in such a way that he won't come back and ask for them again. Right. So Prabhupada says the same thing. He says, when approaching the Lord, he says, one has to be very careful not to approach the Lord for some material benediction. If he does, that he may find himself having to lament like Dhruva Maharaj had to lament. He lamented because he was thinking at that particular time that he wanted association of devotees. And of course, the association of devotees is so nicely described here in this verse. It's like, it says here as the waves of a river constantly flow, such transcendental devotees are situated in an uncontaminated state of life. There's a verse by Narada Muni to King Pachinha Baharshat in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. He says, in the place where pure devotees come together, following the rules and regulations, in that place, if one gets the opportunity to hear their topics, which continuously flow like the waves of a river, one will get caught up in those waves of the river, and one will become freed from the influence of the material energy. No longer, he said, one will no longer become concerned such as hunger and thirst, and one will become completely free from all kinds of illusions, lamentation, and fear, simply to get caught up in the flow of nectar in the association of devotees. And Prabhupada quotes the verse, Satam prasangam ambavirya sambhado bhavanti hritkana rasayana kata, that in the association of devotees of the Lord, the topics of the Lord become very pleasing to the ear and to the heart. When they enter into the heart, then what happens? That as one gradually advances along this path, gradually he becomes detached. He becomes, from material things, he becomes attracted to the Lord, and then real devotional service begins for such a devotee. And in the next verse, Lord Kapila Devi actually says that this is the easiest process of devotional service. He said, this is the easiest process. He said, what is that verse? I have it here. I can't remember exactly what Kapila Devi said, but I was looking it up recently. Yes, here it is. He says, thus consciously engaged in devotional service in the association of devotees, a person gains distaste for sense gratification, both in this world and in the next, by constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord. This process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power. Easiest. Therefore, devotees oftentimes will pray, give me the association of devotees. Because in the association of devotees, if I'm in the association of devotees, it's very easy for me to forget you. I mean, if I'm not in the association of devotees, excuse me, it's very easy to forget you. But when I'm in the association of devotees, I can't forget you. In fact, there's one very beautiful prayer, and I'll end with this prayer because I know I'm supposed to end it at 8:30. But it's a prayer by Haridas Thakur in the Mahaprakash Lila. Haridas Thakur came before Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya explained to him how he appeared before Haridas previously when Haridas was being beaten by the prison guards, how Lord Chaitanya descended and took the beatings on his own back. And then he said to Haridas Thakur, he said, that you are such a great devotee, and anybody who simply hears about you, anyone who speaks about you, he'll receive such auspiciousness. And then Haridas Thakur began offering prayers to the Lord, and he's saying, actually, I'm not fit to be called your devotee. He says, I know that your devotees are those who always remember you. Even if a king, if he doesn't remember you, he'll neglect you. But even if the most fallen person remembers you, you'll never forsake anybody who remembers you. He said, but I don't ever remember you. I don't remember you, therefore I'm not qualified. What qualification do I have even to see you right now? Because I never remember you. And then he began describing different devotees. He said, when Draupadi, when she was in a difficult situation, and when the attempt was being made to have her stripped naked, she remembered you. And because she remembered you, you appeared and you became unlimited cloth simply by her remembrance of you. But Lord, I never remember you. How can I be qualified to be called even your devotee? I don't remember you. The Pandavas, when they were exiled in the forest, the Pandavas, they had great difficulty. When Durvasa Muni came with all of his students, they hadn't sufficient food to offer you, but they remembered you. And when they remembered you, you appeared before them, you took a little bit of vegetable from the pot, you ate it. As soon as you ate it, then Durvasa Muni and all of his disciples, they immediately, their bellies swelled up, they felt completely full, and they didn't even bother to come to take, even though Draupadi had nothing to offer them. This is a result of remembering you. But I don't remember you. Ajamil remembered you. Prahlad Maharaj. He said Prahlad Maharaj's father was trying to kill him, but he remembered you. And because he remembered you, you came and you gave him protection. I don't remember you. So he gave all of these examples of devotees who always remember the Lord. But he said that his qualification is that he didn't have it because he never remembers the Lord. He said, but therefore, you're asking me to please ask for something. So I ask you for something. And please forgive me if I ask for something. I know it's actually an offense on my part because I'm asking something that's very high and I don't deserve it. But I'm going to ask you this, Yuvyu. Please, let me have the remnants of the foodstuffs of your devotee. That is all I ask. Please, let me take birth as a dog in the house of your devotee. Why is Haridas Thakur saying that? Here he is in the presence of the Lord. Because I don't remember you by my own efforts. But when I'm in the association of devotees, I can't forget you. Please, always keep me in the association of your devotees. He's praying in this way. This is the importance of association with devotees. And this is the purpose, as Srila Prabhupada said in his commentary. He says, transcendental devotional service cannot be complete, it cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who's trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engage in Krishna Consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible. Of course, Prabhupada also did emphasize that to be aloof from the Krishna Consciousness Society, because the Krishna Consciousness Society is that place where devotees are always, as he said, 24 hours a day discussing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And I wanted to quote one other verse and end it with this one verse. This is a verse from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says here, first it's a fifth canto Bhagavatam. I think it's Oh, here it is. Yatrotama sloka guna guna nuvada prastutyate gramya katavagadha nishevyamano nudinama mukshua matim satim yachchati vasudeve. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? In the assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. In the assembly of pure devotees, there is discussion only of the quality, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full attention. In the association of pure devotees, by constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the Absolute Truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudeva. I quote this verse because Prabhupada's quoting the Mayavadis to say, okay, what is your plan? You're talking about association of devotees, but what is your plan for liberation? And Prabhupada, and this verse itself says, this is the devotee's plan. His devotee's plan is to be in the association of pure devotees, because the association of pure devotees is only discussion of topics of the Supreme Lord. And in the association of pure devotees, then even those who want to merge into the existence of the Absolute Truth, they abandon that and become gradually attached to the service of Vasudeva, of course. And then Prabhupada says in the purport, and I'll end here. The symptoms of pure devotees are described in this verse. The pure devotee is never interested in material topics. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has strictly prohibited his devotees to talk about worldly matters. Gramya varta na kahibe. One should not indulge in talking unnecessarily about news of the material world. One should not waste time in this way. This is a very important feature in the life of a devotee. A devotee has no other ambition than to serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Krishna consciousness movement was started to engage people 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord and in His glorification. The students in this institution engage in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness from 5 in the morning to 10 at night. They actually have no opportunity to waste their time unnecessarily by discussing politics, sociology, and current events. These will go their own way. I love that. These will go their own way. A devotee is concerned only with serving Krishna positively and seriously. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.